Good morning.
Good morning.
How do we know when we are home? We know we are home by who we are around. After traveling last week, I knew I was home here in Rhode Island when my friend climbed up my fire escape and said, "Hi." Later that day, I was on a walk and I ran into the canon to the ordinary, and I knew that I was home. As I walked around yesterday and came by St. Martin's and saw the roses in full bloom, I knew that I was home. When I felt the Atlantic breeze catch in the back of my throat, that familiar humidity, I knew that I was home and that summer is here. We know we are home by who we are around. And sometimes home gets shaken up a little bit, and we are invited to reconsider what it means to be here, to be home. And I think something of that is going on in today's gospel narrative. Last week, Reverend Linda reflected on the call of Samuel. And we continue with Samuel today, a prophet and a priest. And she implored us to consider how we might nurture the prophet within us and the prophets among us. And it occurred to me, as I was preparing this week, that in order to notice the prophet within us and the prophets around us, we have to recognize when the prophetic is at work. And this is not so easy to do, as we see in today's gospel narrative. Sometimes it's difficult to discern what power is at work and from whom that power comes. Still, Eli, flawed as he is, demonstrated to us last week how to yield to the prophetic and affirm the spirit of truth when it is among us. Even when Eli knows that assenting to God's activity might put his position at risk, he still yielded to the revelation of the Spirit. He still yielded when God spoke to Samuel in the night. So how do we take up this work of discernment, of spirits, of power, when so much is at stake? When we are discerning between something like a revelation of love and a revelation of madness. In today's reading from the Gospel of Mark, Jesus' identity and purpose as a prophet, priest, and redeemer is contested by the people we expect to be closest to him, his family of origin. His family is concerned he has gone mad. He has gone out of his mind. How could he be in his right mind if he's not eating or drinking? He's acting strangely. And still, of course, Jesus is up to something. Jesus is establishing a new type of community, a new type of family. Movements cost something. They arrest us. They bring us into something unexpected and new. But when pressured for clarity about exactly what was going on, about the nature of his power, rather than directly answering, Jesus does what he often does. He meets the questions of the religious authorities and the crowds with parables, which, of course, provoke more questions. His dialogical method is about discernment. Jesus is asking us to discern with him what revelation of power this is and what it might mean for the structures of kinship and family that we have become so accustomed to. So the stakes are high, things are contentious, and we are still only at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. Jesus is already shaking some things up. So the subject of debate in this vignette from the Gospel of Mark is the source and shape of Jesus' power. What kind of power is Jesus yielding to? From whom and to what end? Jesus' ministry, after all, is unusual, is countercultural. Last week, he healed a man's withered hand in the synagogue on the Sabbath and resituated the meaning of the Sabbath as a ritual for human well-being rather than an instrument to prove one's devotion to God. And this week, when the crowd has gathered again in this house to receive healing, to express dissent, probably for a whole cluster of reasons, Jesus is accused of housing the demonic. He has Beelzebub, said the scribes. It is interesting here that they say he has Beelzebub, not that he is Beelzebub. And Beelzebub here is simply another word for Satan or the ruler of the demonic, which raises the question, if Jesus has Satan, how is Jesus relating to the forces of evil in his midst? The religious authorities are alarmed because they are not sure if this Jesus figure is binding evil or being bound by it. This is an understandable fear. We might have similar fears if we were encountering something strange happening in a familiar house of worship or gathering place. Formidable, unmistakable reckonings with evil transfigure the witnesses of these, as Linda reminded us last week, these Kairos kingdom events. And Jesus is at the helm of these transfiguring encounters. Turning the world upside down by inverting power structures is a world-shaking, person-shaping practice. So what do we make of this presence that houses Beelzebub? What do we make of Jesus' power, and what is our part in it? We should assume that the religious authorities, the scribes, are responding earnestly to Jesus' radical reconfigurations of systemic relationships, of familial kinships. Like the Pharisees, the scribes are well rehearsed in religious law. We might recognize ourselves in them. And they are responding to what they perceive to be new, to be unusual behavior. Jesus is clearly in contact with evil or the demonic or something that is disturbing, shaking things up. So what do we do with it? Is it dangerous? Is it prophetic? How do we know? When tried by the authorities for housing satanic power, Jesus answers, "How can Satan cast out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. And if a house is divided against itself, the house will not be able to stand. And if Satan has risen up against himself and is divided, he cannot stand, but his end has come. But no one can enter a strong man's house and plunder his property without first tying up the strong men. Then the house can be plundered." A parable in typical Jesus fashion. So what does it mean? What does Jesus mean? Well, it could be that Jesus is saying that Satan cannot dismantle Satan's own house without destroying himself. And since Satan does not want to destroy himself, something else is probably at work here. We can also read Jesus to be saying that he is occupying Satan's house, not to welcome him, but to bind him, so that a new dwelling can occur, a new community, a new structure can be built in what used to be Satan's house. A kingdom that does not rely on Satan's architectural tactics to master, possess, and control bodies and lands, but instead is a building from God, not built by human hands, that will never be destroyed, as our reading from 2 Corinthians said to us this morning. Jesus, the prophet of prophets, is building something new for a body of people, a family to dwell in. Now go with me for a minute while I talk about bamboo. Bamboo homes are known for their resiliency, their flexibility, and their sustainability. They are uniquely affixed without mortar. They are interminable, lasting generations, weathering extreme storms and the turning of many ages. Imagine for a moment that the kingdom, this new structure that Jesus is building, might be something like a bamboo house with three key material elements: a steel rod, joints, and the bamboo beams themselves. In this vision, Christ might be the steel rod that gives each beam its form and purpose. The Spirit, the Advocate, might be the joints that join the bamboo and the steel. And we, the people of God, the family of God, might be the bamboo beams themselves who stretch out to create a place of welcome that extends to more and more people so that our thanksgiving might increase to the glory of God. Again, 2 Corinthians. So God is building something like a bamboo house, something new of something old. And it has everything to do with the prophetic, discerning the power that is at work in our family, because it is restructuring our home and restructuring our relationships. The Spirit of Truth is the architect of this kingdom home. So when Jesus answers the scribes, he says that something new is occurring. We must believe that even when the kingdom appears in disturbing or dangerous or unusual ways, even when the kingdom appears to be destabilizing power structures that are familiar to us, we must continue to believe that Jesus is up to something new, up to building a new form of beloved community, of family. God's will, which we hear a lot about in today's readings, is to build a new house that is not bound by property law, by policing politics, but is open wide to all who choose to enter and become kin. Mothers, brothers, sisters, parents, children, and elders, all are welcome. The crowd said to Jesus, "Your mothers and your brothers are outside. Go to them." And the preposition "outside" is repeated twice, I think on purpose, to contrast the preposition around, which connotes a different kind of spatial relationship. The dean of Berkeley Divinity School at Yale, a mentor of mine throughout my educational process, shared a meditation on this passage from the Gospel of Mark this week, and in it he said, quote, "Jesus' teaching is not about family life as we otherwise understand it, but about the fact that following him, doing the will of God, is to become a new kind of family. The significance of this for any reader is that they are offered the same relationship to Jesus, to be among those sitting around him, somehow brought into the undivided household where justice and truth are at the table with him and us, and where we find that we too are brother, sister, and mother to him." End quote. So Jesus turns to those around him and says, "You are my kin. This is my home." And this is not to diminish his family of origin who is outside, but is to say to them that in this kingdom home, there is no outside and inside. There is just the place where love is, around Jesus. And this is home. In this kingdom, everyone who is around is recognized as beloved and recognized as at home. We know we are home by those who are around us. So can we dare to imagine this? The reading from 2 Corinthians says that we must not lose heart. And of course, Jesus is imagining an undivided house, a different way of being family, of being home. So I think we must dare to imagine an undivided house made out of different materials, of different spatial relationships, because the kingdom has everything to do with us. God makes God's nature known through us, so we must keep imagining with Christ that there are other ways of living and working and being together, that there are other ways of life and kinship that are possible without reliance on nationalistic and materialistic agendas that are pressed upon us. This week was Cornel West's, the philosopher Cornel West's birthday, and he said, "To be a Christian is to live dangerously, honestly, freely, to step into the name of love as you may land on nothing, yet to keep on stepping into the space around love, because the something that sustains you, no empire can give you, and no empire can take away." End quote. So we must keep stepping into the space around Jesus, the space around love, because here is the home, is the family that we are being called into to enjoy, to get to know, and to create. Jesus is where love is. The space around Jesus, whose spirit of life lives in us, is where we encounter the kingdom and the prophetic in our midst. So what does this unbounded kingdom look like? Thankfully, Scripture does give us some guiding images. Remember Hannah's song and Mary's Magnificat from last week? The kingdom is a home of God's presence. There is no cornerstone like our God. The kingdom is a home of worship. My soul proclaims the greatness of the Lord. The kingdom is a home where needs are met. The hungry are satisfied with good things. The kingdom is a home of justice and equity, where the lowly are lifted up. The kingdom is a home of rest for the weary. The kingdom is a home where wickedness is silenced and weakness is cherished. The kingdom is a home of mercy upon mercy upon mercy upon mercy, where another generation can be imagined. The kingdom is the home of love incarnate that calls holy ones, us all, to participate in preserving this home. The kingdom is a home where we recognize the presence of God, prophet, priest, and redeemer at work within and around us. It is a home where this renewed Eden with the Eucharistic table at its center is revealed to us. Samuel and the words of Jesus, which made family around him, show us that the prophetic is at work here in this home, in us. The kingdom is a place where we can imagine the body, that bodies are not under siege, and lands are nurtured. So how do we know we are home? We are home in the presence of love. And those who bear love into being when we lose our courage. So we cry out to the Lord from our depths with the psalmist, and we dare to trust that God will hear our supplications and act for us and through us on behalf of life, on behalf of home, this kingdom, in accordance with love that has been revealed to us. May all know that they are beloved in a home and the dwelling place of God, where love knows our names and is waiting for us to come in and walk with God through the rubble and make from the remnants a kingdom, home again. Amen.